1903. He has lived in South Texas the majority of his life. He has worked for a railroad company, an oil company, a cab company, and for Pittsburgh Plate Glass Company. Mr. Ponton has shared his memories of the Depression years and has told of the conditions of life in the 1920s and 30s. He is currently living in Mathis, Texas.
You can't tap. Oh, you can't tell by tapping that though, can you?
Okay. Where were you born?
I was born in Yoakum, Texas, August the 30th, 1903.
Were there very many schools back then, and what types of schools?
Well, no, we didn't have too many schools, although I guess we had enough for the population. But they were just small country schools, and the towns, the schools in the little towns wasn't much bigger. And the school teachers were very dedicated, and they worked real hard with the children. And of course, about the seventh grade is about as high as you can go unless you've found some place where you go to high school or go to. And we didn't have but one high school in Yoakum, Texas, and it wasn't very big. And the school children, they didn't get the education like they should have gotten, because half the time they'd have to stay at home and work in the fields. And whenever work come up the field, man, they kept them at home.
Of the teachers back then, did many of them have degrees?
Well, I couldn't say how many had degrees. I think there was lots of them that didn't have degrees. But they were all, I would say, good teachers, dedicated teachers.
Was there the problem in the school systems like they had today of all the rebellions?
No, we didn't have those kind of problems at all. It was altogether different. We didn't have the dope problem, and the kids all seemed to be. The only time that we had any problems in school is when we'd have a fist fight or something like that out on the ground. That's about the only trouble we'd ever had. Mm-hmm.
Were there very many colleges around this area?
None that I know of. You'd have to go to Austin or San Antonio or Houston or some of those larger cities up there to go to college.
Was Del Mar originated during the Depression?
Well, Del Mar was originated, I think, started just before the Depression. It was, I didn't know too much about Del Mar, but it was started just before the Depression.
How did you get to school? Were there any transportation systems?
Well, the only transportation that we had is either walk or ride a horse. There wasn't no cars or nothing like that back them days, and it was kind of a hard proposition. And most all of it wasn't nothing to walk a mile or two to school. You didn't think anything of it.
Were there very many sports in the school?
Very little. Of course, we thought we had a lot. The girls played basketball. We played baseball. I guess that was two of our main sports back in days.
And were there nuns teaching school back
then? Yeah, in the Catholic area, some of the Catholic areas, they had nuns for teachers. But they stopped that after it went on for several years there, and finally the people got tired of it, didn't like it, and so it all went to a public school. They got public teachers in there then.
The roads back there, were they mostly dirt roads?
Yeah, nearly all the roads were dirt roads. What we call a super highway back them days was a gravel highway. And of course it needed constant repairs all the time. And they chewed up a set of casings about every 2 or 3 months. You'd wear out a casing if you run on that thing very much. But that was the only highway that you could travel when it was rainy weather. The rest of them roads was nothing but just dirt roads, and you couldn't hardly get through them.
Were there very many cars?
Not too many cars. Once in a while you see an old Ford or Chevrolet somebody's own. But they had to crack them. They didn't have no batteries to start them, you know. And of course, them roads shook them to pieces. And it was hard on the cars, what few that they did have.
Were there mainly just buggies? And
yeah, buggies and wagons, horseback, and things like that.
Do you remember how much a Ford used to cost back then?
Well, a Ford, you could get a Ford touring car for less than $400. With everything on.
Were there very many farms in this area?
Well, yes, there was quite a few farms. They weren't big farms. They put in lots more farmland after they got machinery to do it with. Most of the farms were small farms. And if a guy had a farm, had 200 or 300 acres, he had a big farm. Of course, some of them owned a lot more land than that, but I mean they didn't have too much of it in the farm. But you take after they got some modern machinery, it ain't nothing for a farmer to farm 1,200-1,500 acres of land now, just one man.
Did they have any people working for them?
Well, yes, but back them days the people that worked for these farmers was sharecroppers, worked on the halves. And they actually never did pay any of the work, you know. And if you worked on a ranch back in the day, and if you got $1 a day, you had a good job.
What was the main crop?
Cotton and corn was the main. Our money crop was cotton. That's where they made the money.
Was there some sugar cane grown down here?
Well, some places had sugar cane growing, but we had cane growing that we made syrup out of. And what we call, it was a type of ribbon cane, but we didn't have too much of it. We had, we broadcast cane back there like they plant grass today, you see, and they cut it and stack it for their cattle and stuff like that, and they plant enough that cane that they could make syrup out of it.
Did they have very much fertilizer back then?
No, nothing but just regular old barn fertilizer, and no modern fertilizer at all.
How much cotton and crop per acre did you get back then?
Well, I would say that if you got a quarter of a bale of an acre, you'd call it a good crop.
Were there very many types of industry?
Very few. Our industry back in days was more or less leather factories where they made different leather goods. It's the saddles, harness, stuff like that. And then cotton oil mills, and that's about all. Over in East Texas, of course, they had lumber mills and things like that, but we didn't have any of them through here.
Were there very many fires in
that
world?
Yeah, we still had quite a few fires. But we didn't have no firefighting equipment out in the country, you know, so we could put it out with a hat, we just had to let it go.
Were there very many fires on farms, like
No, not very few, very few, very few.
Back then, when they drilled for oil, if they hit gas, they didn't think it was very important.
Well, they didn't have those. Back them days, they didn't know what to do with this gas. When they drilled for oil and they hit that gas, they just let the gas escape because they didn't know what to do with it. You know, today, gas is worth more than oil. They'd rather have gas well than oil well. But back them days, is what they wanted was oil, see. And they'd drill these oil wells and they'd hit gas and the thing would blow out and they'd catch a fire and burn for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And cost thousands of dollars trying to close time to try to put that thing out.
Were there very many banks around here?
Well, they was not too many banks. About one or two banks to the town, that was a lot of banks. And as far as banking laws is concerned, we didn't have any banking laws. Deposit $100 in the bank today and it's bust tomorrow. You see, close up, take your money. There wasn't anything to keep them from you. You could, you just run a chance when you put your money in there.
Did a lot of people not put their money in the
bank? Lots of them didn't put it in there just on account of that, especially after so many of them went to busting, you know, during that depression. They was just the world of them closed up.
How about stores? Was there any stores around?
No, not too many. They had what they called general stores, and they carried mostly, general stores carried just about anything that you could use. Farm equipment, groceries, dry goods, medicine, all of that. Of course, there's a lot of medicines they didn't have them days you got today, so it didn't take very big drug store to carries medicine.
How did people pay for their food?
Well, most of the times it was on a credit. Very few people had any money. And when they made a good crop, well, then they'd pay up in the fall of the year. They'd sell their cotton and pay their bills, and usually go in debt before they even get started on another crop for the next year.
Were there very many telephones?
Very few. The type of telephones we had them days was that old ringer type, you know, run down the highway there, and these different farmers would get on that same line, and when somebody would ring one of them, they'd all listen.
Okay, were trains very important back then?
Trains was our main transportation. That's everything that we produced and shipped out of here went by railroad. It come in by rail, it went out by rail. We didn't have no trucks for the highways, and that's the only modern way of transportation that we had was railroad. That was important, them railroads. Very important.
Was working for the railroad important?
Ooh, yeah, man. You had a job with the railroad, you was really somebody.
Well, you worked for the railroad,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I worked for the railroad.
What did you do when you worked for it?
Well, I started out as a call boy when I was 17 years old for the railroad. And after I got old enough, I went into the shops, in the board shop, and learned a trade. Boilermaker's trade. Spent 4 years learning that boilermaker's trade. Then after I learned that trade, it affected my ears a little bit. So they gave me a job then as, I learned to get to be a fireman, and I was out on the road for a short while when Southern Pacific took that road over. So after Southern Pacific took the road over, well, of course, seniority counts in the railroad, they can bump you out of whatever job they want if they got seniority open. So therefore, I just quit and went to work for Standard Oil Company building tanks.
What was a call boy that you had a job, first job?
With the what now?
With the railroad, the first job.
Call boy. Well, the call boy is a young fella that it goes and calls the engineers and firemen and tells them that so and so they're needed to take the train out at certain times. See, a lot of times they know when their schedule is, but a lot of times one of them is sick and he couldn't make it. You see, so whenever that happens, you have to go and hunt the next guy. And the reason why they use these call boys on bicycles because there wasn't none of them had telephones, and you had to go hunt them. And a lot of times, them railroad guys, I'll tell you the truth, I went and looked up a lot of them. They'd be in a poker game, and they'd ask me to report them sick. They call the next guy, and I done it.
Were there very many people have bicycles?
No, not too many. They were a few, but not too many.
Were you around here when the hurricane of 1919
hit? I was up here at Runge, Texas. I was working for my cousin up there on a farm, William Cut, when that storm hit.
Did it tear up the area?
It tore up everything, man. It didn't. It just stripped every field. There wasn't no cotton left. There wasn't nothing left. That wind. It flooded Corpus Christi and drowned a thousand people. Lots of them they never have heard of since.
Were there very many droughts or floods here?
Well, yes and no. They were some droughts, yeah. Sometimes it'd go for 2 or 3 years there, we'd get a little rain, but not enough to make a crop, see. And so that threw these farmers in bad shape. I've been out through West Texas during them droughts when there wasn't enough of grass on 1,000 acres out there to raise one goat. The ground was bare, there wasn't nothing.
What was the Prohibition era like?
Well, we had Prohibition, but we also had plenty with beer. And I'd say 90% of the people was making either beer or whiskey or something else, you know. Prohibition just caused everybody to violate the law. That's about all I can say for
it. Do you think that more people drank during Prohibition than drank before?
Well, they was lots of people drank. And you know, I'll just tell you a little joke about this drinking. After they legalized liquor, a friend of mine asked me to come by his house and have a drink. And I went by there. And instead of going in the house, we went out to the garage. Now, mind you, they legalized liquor. But he'd been used to hiding his whiskey and drank it like that. Said he couldn't drink it no other way. And I asked him why. He said, well, he just got used to this over the years and he didn't enjoy it if he just sat down at the table and drank it. He said he'd rather hide and take a drink out there the only way he'd enjoy it.
There were pretty many bootleggers back then?
Ooh, yeah, bootleggers, lots of bootleggers.
Were there very many bandits back then?
Yeah, we had all kinds of, you call them bandits or gangsters or whatever you want to call them. They'd hold up these banks and stores and rob different people, you know, and dives and gambling houses, just anything they could rob. So that's when old Pretty Boy Floyd and all that bunch was running loose. Dillinger.
Did you meet a friend of Pretty Boy Floyd?
Well, I met a fellow I can't think of his name, but he runs with Pretty Boy Floyd. And Pretty Boy Floyd was supposed to have been down in the valley at that particular time. And this guy come back through here. That's when I was running the cab company. Pomeroy. Fellow named Pomeroy. And he was running with Pretty Boy Floyd. And so he come back through here. He was from Oklahoma, and I think Pretty Boy Floyd was from up in that area too. See.
Will you tell us the story about the time when you told that newspaper guy that Pretty Boy Floyd was down here?
Oh yeah. Okay. Well, Pretty Boy Floyd had robbed several places down in South Texas here. Him and his gang, and held up a bank or two, and so here in Corpus had a little hospital up on Chaparral Street there, on that old Chaparral upstairs there, in a little bit of building there, what's called the Pope Building. And as one of the farmers had gotten sick, and he had four or five brothers, and they all looked like rangers, you know, because they wore them big white hats. And so they all come in, you know, on account of him being sick there in that hospital. I think he's going to undergo an operation. But he was standing out in front of the hospital there, this Pope Building, and this here, this boy, this guy come by, you know. He wasn't what you call a reporter. He's just a guy that liked to run and tell everything he could hear, you know. And so he wanted to know what in the world that was, all them rangers over there. He didn't know whether they were rangers or farmers or what. So he said, well, man, been you here all day? And he said, no, he hadn't heard anything. I said, they captured old Pretty Boy Floyd out here in North Beach. And I said, they got him up there in the hospital, shot him all the pieces. And I said, that's a bunch of rangers. And man, he took out and went to the Caller Times, and they was playing a baseball game out there, Corpus, San Antonio. And they reported out there, and everybody left stands and come downtown to see what was going on. It broke up the baseball game.
Were there very many newspapers in?
No. We had one newspaper here in Corpus, the Caller. And there's one or two other little papers that sprang up, but they wouldn't last long, you know. Somebody'd open up a little old shop, and he'd run a paper there for a while, and then he'd finally fade out, and you'd forget all about him. Somebody else would open up. But that was the only successful paper that we had, Caller Times.
How much did it cost to get the paper then?
Well, I think you could buy a paper on the street for a nickel. And probably a dollar a month or something like that for the paper.
Were there very many people bringing alcohol across the border from Mexico?
Yeah, it's running lots of it. World of whiskey come across that border. Especially grain alcohol. They take that grain alcohol and they cut that and make liquor out of it, you know, and serve it in different places. And there were lots of whiskey come from Canada, and they bring it down here. And lots of that whiskey from Canada come in by boat. And one particular time, there was a boatload of this here whiskey was out here in the Gulf, and the federal agents was after them, and they knew it, and they dumped this stuff overboard, see. And it all floated into Padre Island. Somebody reported that, and everybody went down there and got them cases of whiskey, man. Mm-hmm. And everybody in Corpus had whiskey. Come from Canada.
Can you tell us what the Depression was like?
Well, it was, it's kind of hard to describe it. Because there wasn't much there to describe. Nobody had no job. You couldn't get a job. Nobody had no money. And I never had so much time off and had more friends in all my life. But anyway, these farmers, you know, were used to buy vegetables and things like that. You could go out there and they'd give you all you wanted. You could buy a steak for 10 cents a pound if you had the dime. So they just wasn't. And And liver, they'd give you all the liver you wanted. If you bought a pound of steak, they'd give you a pound of liver. Now that liver's a dollar and something.
Did many people lose their homes?
People lost their homes, Sharon. People lost their homes, and farmers and these big insurance companies, that's where they probably made a world of money. That they've taken these farms away from these farmers, you know, and stuff like that. And lots of these farmers lost their farms. And lots of the people bought their, had bought homes and couldn't pay for them, and they'd lose them. But actually, they wasn't as many homes taken away from the people as there was farms taken away from these farmers. And ranchers losing their ranches. These big insurance companies carrying them papers, you know. And of course, they couldn't pay it. They just take it over.
What did the insurance companies do with all those farms, papers?
Well, they just held them, and then after the depression was over, they resold them, you know, and they borrowed the money out of it. These farmers all went broke. Ranchers, too.
Were there mostly ranchers down?
Yeah, mostly ranchers. All through this area here was mostly ranchers. There's lots of farming, but nothing like you got today.
Were there very many soup lines?
Yep, there was. During the Depression, we had a big soup line here in Corpus Christi, and fed hundreds and hundreds of people coming through here. You know, WPA. And of course, that WPA, it just put people to work and give them something to do. You know, the government allowed them a certain amount of money there, you know. And so these fellas that was on this WPA, they wasn't any of them work, it's just out there. And of course, they do a little work. But I remember one deal down there where, this WPA it put a certain amount of people with one supervisor, see. And there was an old ex-Raptor fighter was out of a job there in Corpus. He didn't have no job, he couldn't promote a fight. Nobody had any money to come see a fight anyway. And so they give him a job as supervisor for WPA. Okay. Now, most all of them, you know, they didn't do anything. They just stand around on the show, you know, and they just do the more than they had to. Well, by gosh, it wasn't that great for him. He'd be deaf three or four of them. And boy, when they went in his gang, they went to work. And people would rather just stay on the soup line than to get to the WPA, especially where he was. He got lots of notoriety.
Did you used to work for a cab company?
Yeah. During the Depression, I couldn't get a job, and I went to running the Yellow Cab Company for the people that owned it, and a bunch of bankers out of Galveston owned the cab company. And, they'd take it over from the owner, and he'd went broke and left, and I'd take it over and run Inferno, and done the best I could with it until I could get a job. That's when I left there and went to work to the first place class after the Depression was over with, or just before it was over with.
What type of people did you drive around in your cab?
Well, mostly, you see, Corpus was a little old fishing village here, and it was a kind of a tourist attraction, you know. And we had Pat Ryland down there, and people from St. Louis and different areas, Chicago and far away to New York and all up through there, people that had money would come down here on the train, see. And we'd take them and show them this part of the country down here. Of course, local people didn't have anything, but we'd pick these people up and we kept the cab company going because we had some real nice. What tourists we had come down here all had money, even though it was during the Depression. But there were people that had money, you know, from the East England.
Did you have any competition with other cab companies?
Yeah, they was up on the, we had some Mexican cab companies there. They wasn't cab companies, they were just individuals that back there, they wasn't none of them really organized. And the Yellow Cab Company was the only station cab company we had here. And these Mexicans, they got money enough to get them a car while they went running the cab. They wasn't anything to keep them coming. And so they all began to be the only place we'd make any money is the hotels and the trains. Wasn't no local people calling those cabs. And so these Mexicans got to crowding us out down there. And so I just got a hold of me a bunch of thugs and went down there and beat up about 9/10 of them. And cleaned them out.
See? Didn't have any more competition.
I got rid of that competition, I tell you. I had to keep that company going.
Was there very many types of discrimination?
I don't think so. They might have been a little, but a nigger stayed in their place, and you never heard of nothing about discrimination. Lord, they didn't know what discrimination was then. You know, niggers stayed in their place, white people stayed in their place. And if there was ever any discrimination, if a nigger got out of line, they just killed him. That's all there was to it. They wasn't no, that's just all there was to it in a Mexican territory. It didn't make any difference, they'd shoot. It's just like one of them rangers. One time he wasn't a ranger, but I asked him, he had a bunch of notches on his pistol. And I knew he killed a bunch of Mexicans. And I said, I thought you had more notches than that on there. I said, I know three or four Mexicans you killed. He said, yeah, but man, I don't count Mexicans.
Were there very many people in this area in the Ku Klux Klan?
Well, there's quite a few. I was working in a restaurant one time. When I was working for the railroad company, I had so much time off, and I was single them days, and I worked in this restaurant, and I used to pay for board working in this restaurant. And so I knew they were preparing a big banquet for a lot of people. But I didn't know who they were. But I found out after I got into it why it was a Ku Klux Klan. But there's lots and lots of local people that I knew that had been there. I never knew there was a Ku Klux Klan.
Was it pretty secret organization?
Yeah, it was secret. It was secret, but then it was secret one way, and it was one way it wasn't. They was open in their meetings and everything else. People knew what they said first. And I don't think it was too secret. No, really, I don't. It was, of course, they had secret meetings, I'm sure they did. But golly, they had secret open meetings, burnt the fire cross and all of that right out there, and had all kinds of people see. So I don't guess it was too secret. But they stood for law and order and for people to do what they ought to do. I'll tell you the truth, I think there was a lot of dirty things that was laid off on the Ku Klux Klan that they didn't have nothing to do with. There's other things happened to people, well, the Ku Klux Klan done that. Well, I don't think that. I think a lot of that was just people just laid it off on them, so it was a good place to place.
Did you know of any instances like when they tarred and feathered anyone?
Yeah. We, bunch of us boys standing around the depot when a car come by and dumped an old boy out that said tarred and feathered, dumped him out right there in the depot right before it. And man, he was in several shape. We called an ambulance and sent him to the hospital, and I don't think there's any question about that not being the Ku Klux Klan, because they tarred and feathered him.
Was it a Negro?
No,
he
was a white man.
A white man?
Yeah, he was a white man. Yeah.
You know why they did it?
Well, I think he was mistreating his family. I think that had more to do with it than anything else. I heard that anyway. He wasn't taking care of his home, his family like that.
Did you hear of any instances where they did anything to Negroes?
No, I don't think they would harm a nigger any more than they'd harm anybody else. I think if a guy got out of line and they straightened him out, they tried to do it. The niggers, it seemed like the niggers was more scared of the Ku Klux Klan than anybody else, but I don't think they harmed the niggers any more than they'd harm anybody else.
So you think it was more of a, what, police?
Yeah, I think so. That's right.
You want to tell us about when they held that open speech out there and all these thousand people were coming?
Yeah, for about a month they advertised this here, this Grand Dragon or whoever he was going to make a big talk, and they was making a membership drive that had a lot to do with it, you see. And it's out on the ranch and up on a high hill, and they burnt that far across, and they made all these talks and everything, and there's just hundreds and thousands of people went out there. And when they all got out there, well, these here opposition to the Ku Klux Klan, they bought these tacks from all the hardware stores that they could find, seeing scattered them up and down the highway. And of course, everybody out there had flats. It took about a week or 10 days to get that straight down.
Were there very many types of superstitions back then?
Well, there's always a little superstition, you know. People that tell ghost tales and things like that. Where we hear most of our ghost tales is when we get with a gang and go down the river bottom fishing and things like that. And I remember one night we were sitting down there one dark night, and some of the older folks were telling these ghost tales, you know. And one of these darn owls squeaked over our heads. And brother, I want you to know, and I'd never heard an owl holler like that, and we've been scared of these here panthers, you know, they squall, you know, carry on something similar to that. And they'd been telling us about these panthers being down there anyway. And I'd like to scare the food out of brother man. Well, I can tell you one tale. I was coming from dance one night after a big rain, and riding a horse, and I had to pass by a cemetery, you see. And this old boy had walked from this cemetery, from this here dance, and he'd gotten over in this cemetery, and I didn't know it. When I come along there, he said, "Si, sure is muddy out there, ain't it?" And I didn't know there was anybody in there. He said, "Boy, I like to beat that horse to death anyway."
Well, you
want to
tell us what were the weddings like back then?
Man, it was a thing. Most of the weddings took place on weekend, Saturday, I think. And they'd kill a beef or two, and they'd start barbecuing Friday evening. They'd barbecue all night Friday night. They'd have this big dinner Saturday and this wedding. They'd dance all Saturday evening, all Saturday night, and all day Sunday, and break up late Sunday night. Man, they really celebrate. There ain't no two ways about it.
Do you know about any hangings?
Well, I can tell you about at least one. I've heard of several others. But I know down here at Edna, Texas one time, and I've been by this place where this hanging took place. And there was a nigger that insulted a white woman. And instead of them putting him in jail in Edna, well, they were going to take him to another town, and they took him out on a country road, so he came to this other town. And this bunch met this sheriff with this nigger, and old, with this, they were carrying this nigger over there. And old Powdy, the sheriff and his deputy, and they took that nigger and they hung him right on this bridge that crosses the Orinoco River below Ida, below Edna. And my uncle, the reason why I know it so well is my uncle was telling me about it, and he's got on the farm right next to it, so, and showed me the tree where the nigger was hung. So. And back them days, the nigger didn't have a chance. I mean, they didn't, they never did try one of them. They'd take him out and get him, or hang him, or do something to him. But as far as just taking him to court, there's very few of them ever went to court, especially when they done something like that. So.
About what year was this, you know?
You mean when this happened? Mm-hmm. I think it must have been along in 1912 or 13, somewhere back in that.
Were there any Indians around here, too?
Well, there were Indians all through this part of the country, but that was way before my time, you know. There were the Indians, though. You can find all kinds of markings, you know, from Indians. And in lots of different places. Now you take down at Flower Bluff, and all through there, they've found arrows, and they've found all sorts of Indian deals down in there. And for Indians, have been all through this for years ago. So you can go and you take these here Boy Scouts. Lord, they scout this part of the country, and they all up around Kerrville and all through here, they found all kinds of arrowheads and things like that, you know, and Indian burial grounds and all that kind of stuff. Talking about Indians, I'd like to tell you one story. I was in this cave in New Mexico, and the University of New Mexico is uncovering this cave. It's an Indian village. And we went down in this cave. You go from one room to the other. See, they gradually uncut. It's in Aztec, New Mexico. And on their windows, they had what's similar to what you would think today is a Phoenician flag. And they had these things split out of bamboo and rawhide and hanging on these windows, and you can see them there today. And I was in Mount Vernon, and we went through that old Washington home up there, and there's a line up there, and an old boy, he looked up there and he said, look up there. He said, they got Phoenician blinds on them windows. He said, now you know that's a face. He said, they didn't have them days. I turned around and told him, I said, listen, fella, I come out of the cave just about 2 weeks ago, and they claimed it was 800 years ago. And I said, these Indians had been the Phoenician blinds on their windows. And the same thing, only just made out of bamboo. So you can find Indian relics everywhere you go. Make it a difference.
Did any of your relatives ever tell you any Indian stories in this part?
Yeah. My grandfather's brother was a doctor. And he practiced up around Gonzales County and around Gonzales and Hallisville. And back them days when he was practicing, well, the Indians would like to kill him. And the guy that was riding with him, they shot his horse. And the only reason they didn't get him, he got off his horse and went to the woods, and they never did catch him. But they had Indians long about then, you know. That must have been the 80s, 90s, somewhere back around the 80s, I guess, 75 or 80s. There was Indians back there them days.
You know of any World War One stories?
Well, I'll tell you about one story the guy was telling me. There's very little I know about World War One.
Was your grandfather living around these parts?
Well, now, my grandfather was a farmer and rancher up here at Eastdale, Texas. And his brother was Dr. Joe Pond, that practiced medicine all through that area. And Joe Pond was buried at Eastdale, and so was my grandfather. Now, Joe Fonten was a big landowner. He was a doctor and a preacher. So if he couldn't cure him one way, he'd cure him some other way. So 2 years ago, you know, the state recognized him as an outstanding citizen. And he was a judge, and so was my grandfather was a judge of Lavaca County. But Joe Pond was an outstanding citizen back in them days, and he's done lots for humanity. And so the Historical Society of the state recognized all that. And so here last year, they placed a marker on his grave on the ranch where he was buried outside of Eastdale, Texas. So we all went to that dedication, and of course there's people from all over that part of the country was in there. And his brother, which is my grandfather, he was buried at Hope, Texas. And he was a farmer, and at one time was a county judge in Lavaca County. And my daddy, he died, he was a barber, and he died when I was 3 years old. And so I've got one brother, which is in Dallas.
Do you know of any World War I stories?
Well, there's a whole lot I didn't know about World War I. I know that I had a cousin that was lost in the Titanic. Went down to the Titanic. And then I can tell you a story that a friend of mine told me. He said that back there during World War I, there was a bunch of them were sent to San Antonio, were crashed and sent to San Antonio. And he said that when they got out there, that they were welcomed and this and that by some colonel or some high officer there. And he said, finally, they took them around some corrals there, a whole bunch of them, and told him, he said, now look, boys, he said, you're in the Army now. And he said, we're going to have to, we'll congratulate you. He said, now there ain't a thing in the world that we can make you do. But he said, we can make you wish to God that you, you always did do it, see?
Were there very many festivals or fairs down here?
Oh, yeah. They always had county fairs. And of course, they always have some kind of a festival celebrating something or other. Especially the 19th of June. Niggers Day, they had a big festival. Yeah. Up through this area, there was lots of niggers. You know, there wasn't too many nations. But boy, the 19th of June, well, them niggers really. That's when them niggers were set for the thing. That's Nigger Day, you know. And now they really celebrated.
Were there any rodeos?
Rodeos, yeah, we had lots of rodeos, but nothing like they have today. Of course, they got regular showmen and good horses and that. But we had good rodeos. And we didn't have the calf rope and the things that they have today, but then bull riding. But we had lots of good rodeos, horse riding, and they had some good cowboys back in the day, too. But I don't think they put on a show like they do today, and they didn't have the equipment to put it on with, you know. But what they do is just the farmers would get together, and they'd pick out their wildest horses, and they'd put this show on. They'd meet at some ranch or some bald diamond or something or another, and they'd put this show on, you know, ride these broncos, Bringing in, always somebody bringing in something that hadn't never been rode, you know, until these cowboys riding. I remember on this Grand Ranch, my uncle was a foreman down there, and always wanted to go out on a drive, you know. The each year they have a roundup, and Grant is kind of make a showplace out of this thing. People would go down there, and he carried the chuck wagon and the horses and everything, you know. And so I always wanted to go out there with him, and so I went down there, and so I got ready to go out on this roundup, and they had this here herd of horses there in the corral. And they said, "Boy, go out there and rope you one." And I roped me one, laid him out there and saddled him up. And I got on him. That horse told me the king of the jump. And I didn't want to get on him. They said, "Well," said, "now he'll go on and work all, you can work cattle all day on him. He won't pick anymore. If you get another, he's going to do the same thing." So these horses are trained to do that. They pick you up every morning when you saddle them up. They pick you, you know. And sure enough, I did. After I got back on him, I went on and rode him all day. But you know, it is interesting to me because I never went on one of those trips. And they had to ride the chuck wagon. They carried their horses. And they'd always, and they, he didn't have no trouble getting help. So everybody volunteered to go, you see, because they had a big barbecue every day, you know, and it takes about a week to round these cattle up. And this was down in Jackson County, and the railroad run right through the range. And they'd round these cattle up. Of course, they took their time, done a good job, they enjoyed it to go along, you know. Of course, the friends, well, to these people, and they, out of New York, they come down there once or twice a year, you know, instead. 36 days. Of course, they had hands that carried the ranch on for them.
Were there really a cattle rush then?
Yeah, but cattle wasn't worth much them days. But they still, every once in a while, you'd hear somebody lose a bunch of. But you see, the back in days, people lost cattle because they didn't have good fences. They think somebody rustled their cattle, but they find them in some other pasture, maybe 10 miles from there, see, where they drift off.
You weren't really barbed wire?
No, they were too, well, they had some, but they weren't too good. They just go right to them. Then, another thing, cattle were wilder them days than they are now. Man, they were wild. You had a job around them things, but them days, and they'd fight you. I've had them bring my bulls to run right into a horse that I was riding.
Aww. At the county fairs, do they ever have, who could eat the most watermelon, or?
All of those, egg rolling, apple eating, and all that kind of stuff. They had all of that, foot races and all that kind of stuff, yeah. The women that bring canned goods there, you know what I mean? They'd have, with being canned, it'd be in jars, you know. And they'd make cakes and all of them, you know, and they'd pick out their prizes. They had their chickens, turkeys, the hogs, and all that. And a lot of times they'd have horse races, ball games, and things like that. And it was interesting. Usually run about a week.
Well, you've been living in Corpus Christi, and then you moved here to Mathis?
Yeah, I lived in Corpus Christi, and then I moved up here, you might say. Well, we've owned this place here on the lake 10 or 12 years. We've been living here since I retired from Pittsburgh Place last 3 years ago.
Well, I want to thank you very much for letting me interview you. Yeah. Is that all?
Well, thanks. Glad to do it, Sharon.